Shabbat said, good morning. So today's daf is Tesvav. First, I want to thank Art Miller for sponsoring the shir, as well as the beautiful breakfast in back. It's in honor of Art's birthday. Mazel tov. Until 120, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless you and share it with beautiful bracha, gizunt, nachas from your children. All right, so today's daf is Tesvav. We're going to pick up on your Dalet Amud Beis. Five lines up from the bottom. Tashma. So the Gemara says the following. Tashma. Dom Rabbi Yochanan Benuri. Heich halacha zu revachas biyisa. So we'll remember again, you know from yesterday's daf, that the topic of discussion, as we saw in the Mishnah, a fundamental dispute between Beisham and Beisil. Meaning it turns out that which we stated in the first Mishnah, namely, that if a man dies without children and he leaves behind two wives, Rachel and Leah, and one of those wives happens to be an erva to his surviving brother. For example, Reuven's married to Rachel and Leah, and Rachel happens to be Shimon's daughter. So Reuven married his niece. So the first Mishnah told us that Lamaisa, the presence of the erva, precludes Yibum from occurring at all, even with the Tzara. So we took that from based on the first Mishnah, as everybody being on the same page with that particular concept. As it turns out, that is actually the subject of dispute between Bisham and Beisilel. Our Mishnah reflected the view of Beis Hillel, but Beis Shammai actually holds that as much as Yibum cannot be done with the erva wife, Yibum can be done with the tzara, with the co-wife. So now the question that became, did Beis Shammai actually, now the other part of us that came up is, there's obviously a couple of different machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and the fundamental question was, did Beis Shammai actually follow their halachic rulings, or at the end of the day, did they defer to Beis Hillel, being that Beis Hillel ultimately was the majority, as you saw in yesterday's daf, and also the Gemara alluded to the fact that there was the episode with the Baskal, the heavenly voice that came out and said that the halacha follows Beis Hillel. So this is a fundamental shaila. We know Beis Shammai disagrees, but did Beis Shammai actually rule in accordance with their piske halacha, or did they defer to Beis Hillel? So the Gemara says, Tashma de Rabbi Yochanan Ben Uri. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Uri said, Heich halacha zu revachas b'Yisrael. How did this halacha, now when he says this halacha, it's referring to the case of Tzaras Erva, right, the co-wife of an Erva wife in a Yibum situation, how did it actually play out within Klal Yisrael? On one hand, we could say, Nasek divrei Beis Shammai, so maybe we could go like Beis Shammai. Remember, Beis Shammai says that in the case of the Erva, you could still do Yibum with the wife who is not an erva, so we could go ahead and do yibum like Beis Shammai. If that's the case, havlad mamzer leBeis Hillel. I mean, I also remember, according to Beis Hillel, you are not permitted to do yibum with the co-wife of the tzara, and if meaning that she still has the status of what as your brother's wife, Eshes Ach, and therefore lemaisa, according to Beis Hillel, if you were to marry her, the co-wife of the erva, you would produce mamzerim. On the other hand, Naaseh kedivrei Beis Hillel, if we're paskin like Beis Hillel, and therefore not do Yibum, not do Chalitza, because totally exempt, and therefore again, the Tzara wife would go ahead and marry another man. What's the problem? So according to Beis Hillel, they're in violation of a lav, because remember again, according to Beis Shammai, Rashi Gemara says, if we were to go in accordance with Beis Hillel, namely, remember what is Beis Hillel paskin, that in a case of Tzaras Erva, where one of the wives is an Erva, there is no Yibum, there is no Chalitza, which means nothing happens. The women go out and marry whoever they want, then Havlad Pogum L'divrei Beis Shammai. If, let's say, again, the co-wife, the Tzara, were to marry another man, according to Beis Shammai, the children, the offspring from that union would be Pogum. And we'll say, what does that mean, Pogum? Look at Rashi. Havlad Pogum L'divrei Beis Shammai. Dim Haya Kohen Pasal L'Kahuna. For example, again, if let's say the co-wife went ahead and married another man, a Kohen, and they had a child, they had a son, that son would not be a practicing Kohen. That son would be what's called Pogum. I will say Pogum is a terminology that, you know, where do you recognize the term Pogum, but where do you recognize it from? Usually, you know where it comes up. If I'm Kiddush, right? If I'm making Kiddush on a kos, and what happens? And I drink a little bit from it. So what happens? That kos is pugum, which means I can't use it now for, let's say, benching or for to make Kiddush again. I have to add an additional. It's. I don't know what the good English word for pugum is. Tainted. Oh, shh. Yeah. Wow. Very good. Okay. People from South Florida speak English also. Good. All right. It's excellent. So good. So again, so it's tainted. So it's tainted. So what happens? Meaning, so the idea is that according to Beis Shammai, because this was an illegal marriage. Now, granted, it's only a lav. When I say only, because compared to mamzerus, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it's a lav. But according to Beis Shammai, at the end of the day, lemaisa, again, the child is going to be pogum. I also want to point out, the pogum status only has an impact in this particular case. Meaning, if she were to go ahead and marry Yisrael, and they had a son, so that son, bless you, that son would be totally fine. That's what Rashi points out over here. This pogum thing only has an impact vis-a-vis the kahuna. It doesn't have an impact regarding anyone else. But nevertheless, it's tainted. Correct. It would also be the violation of an assay of Yavama Yavo Aleha. So really you're gonna have a violation of an assay, which is not as important for these purposes, but the violation of a lav. So the Gemara says the following. So what should we do? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri advances a very interesting approach. Bo unetakin on Litzaros, Sheikholtzos Velom Misyavmos. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri advances what seems to be such a great resolution to this. Because also remember, here's what we have. We have a circumstance now where, remember, Reuven dies without children. Reuven's married to Rachel and Leah. Rachel happens to be the daughter of his brother, right? Shimon's daughter. Reuven's married to his niece. So the shaila now is, so everybody agrees, obviously, there's nothing to talk about with Rachel because Rachel is an erva to the Yavam. The shaila is with who? With Leah. So remember again, according to Beis Hillel, what do you do? According to Beis Hillel? Nothing. Because according to Beis Hillel, there's no Yibum in this situation, there's no Chalitza. Leah goes on, hopefully, to find another husband and goes on to rebuild her life. According to Beis Shammai, what do you have to do? Leah has to do Chalitza. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri comes up with a great idea. And now, also, the problem is that we need, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is trying to find a compromise position that ultimately, again, would satisfy all the halachic opinions. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, I have it. Mandate Chalitza and prohibit Yibum. Because if you just mandate chalitza, then what have you done, Rabosai? See, according to Beis Hillel, if you do chalitza, what have you done? Nothing, by the way, right? Nothing, because that act, according to Beis Hillel, is absolutely meaningless. Meaning, that act won't even prohibit her to the kahuna, because according to Beis Hillel, the act is mamish meaningless. But according to Beis Shammai, at least what? According to Beis Shammai, you've satisfied the yibum / chalitza requirements. You've taken care of it. So meaning it's a win-win situation. So it seems to be a great approach to ultimately dealing with a situation that could have very significant consequences. So here, yes.
At the very beginning we said if there is no
So correct. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is saying is here in this type of situation, you're right, according to Beis Hillel, there is no chalitza. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is saying, but let's just do it anyway. Because if we do it, you're right, according to Beis Hillel, I've done a totally meaningless act. But at least according to Beis Shammai, I've taken care of the real obligation for Yibum / chalitza in this case. Meaning, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is saying is, according to Beis Hillel, you're not going to hurt her by doing chalitza. But according to Beis Shammai, she will gain from doing chalitza. To which the Gemara is something very interesting. Lo hispiku ligmar asadavar, achinitra fashla. So what's that? This is a very cryptic Gemara. Very cryptic. So we're actually, the Gemara is going to come back to this in a couple of blot. So essentially what it means for now is, as great of a suggestion as it was, for some reason, they couldn't seal the deal until the hour was snatched. So we'll say, we're going to come back, we're going to have to see what that means. I'll tell you what it means. Meaning, what's going to end up happening, I don't want to hold you in suspense. I see people are getting like a knot in their kish because I don't know if that's the cake or the suspense. Right? But listen to this. So what the Gemara is going to say, we're going to see, is they decided that the halacha was Beis Hillel. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was trying to establish a compromise position. So what happened was, we're going to see later on that things kind of escalated until the point that they felt they had to actually decide decisively who the halacha was, like in a paskin like Beis Hillel. So okay, the opportunity, it's also a good metaphor for life that sometimes, you know, if you want to make a compromise, so often compromise can only be made in a very narrow window. And if you miss the window of compromise, ultimately that window, that opportunity passes. All right. Amar Shimon Gamliel, Ma na'aseh lehem letzaros harishonos. So first of all, Reb Shimon Gamliel says to Reb Yochanan ben Nuri, one second. That's a very nice compromise position. Only one problem. What are you going to do with all of the women prior to the compromise. See, Rashi points out over here, Manas al Tzaras Harishonos, Shenes Yavmu, Ubnehem Mamzerim, Ibnigmor Halacha Shelo Yisyavmu. See, we'll say, here's the problem. What are you going to do with all of the women who paskind like who? Like Beis Shammai. And said, therefore, that Yibam was permitted. According to Beis Hillel, again, remember, ultimately, the children are, see, he writes over B'nehem Amzerim. But the idea is the compromise is very nice from here going forward. But what's going to happen to all the women who potentially did Yibum beforehand? What's going to happen to them? So the Gemara says, we'll say it's also a very important idea in Halacha, that in general, when deciding Halacha, there is a concept of Imkein Ata Motzi Laz Al Harishonim. When you paskin Halacha now, you also have to be cognizant, not just of the impact of the Halacha of present and future, but you have to be cognizant of the impact of the halachic decisions now that they may have on the past, which is very, very important. Sometimes it's part of the most difficult aspect of Pesach Halacha. Now going back, if you tell me that Beis Shammai actually implemented their halachic decisions, then the question of Shimon Gamliel makes sense. Because again, you have women who literally did, in the case of Tzaras Erva, you had women who mamish did Yibum. Eli Amrit lo asu, my Manasseh. But if you say that Beis Shammai never actually implemented their decisions, they disagreed in halacha, but they never actually paskind like their halachic approaches, then my Manasseh, then what kind of question are you asking? Amram Nachem Rayitzchak lo nitzicha ella litzara atzma. No, the truth is, I'll tell you where it comes up. Where it comes up is for the tzara herself. Rashi says, litzara atzma va'atzaros de Beis Hillel shenisu l'shukai v'hai umay naase lo abanim kai ta'afi l'Beis Shammai k'sherim l'kal ella atzara atzma. To which the Gemara's Amram Nachem Rayitzchak is, the truth is, we're not worried about the offspring. What you're really asking about is the tzara, is the co-wife herself. Uman naase hachi kamar. This is what it means to say. Hanach tzaros te beis hillel le beis shammai hechi navid l'rabo. So what the Gemara is asking is like this. Those co-wives of the erva, who according to beis hillel were what? What's their status of us? According to beis hillel, if you're a tzara of an erva, right? Erva, and therefore no yibum, which means who do you marry? Anyone you want, except for the surviving brothers of your husband, right? So these women, who according to Beis Hillel, were essentially released from any kind of Yibum obligation, therefore married guys, whoever those guys are, LeBeis Shammai Hechi Na'avid Lehu. How should we deal with them in Beis Shammai's eyes? On one end, you could say, Lecholtzu. You know, Rabosei, it's very easy to remedy it. How do you remedy it, Rabosei? Have them do a chalitza now. Now, this is actually interesting, because what the Gemara seems to be suggesting is, let them even do a chalitza now, even though what? They're married to someone else, right? Let them, because again, essentially what the Gemara is saying is, Lemaisa, as long as they haven't done a chalitza, that love of marrying another man still exists. So let them just do a chalitza now. Be done with it. Someone says, no, you can't do that. Why? Mim asya gavrayum. This is so fascinating. Because what happens? If you make them do a chalitza, they'll become repulsive to their husbands. And I will say, what does it mean they're going to become repulsive to their husbands? Because if I'm married to a woman, and now she's doing chalitza with another man. So what does that mean? What is that? It erodes the marital bond. Because remember, what chalitza really represents is what? Is that she had a connection. She had a connection to this man. So now again, I'm sorry?
I'd rather it strengthen the bond because she's doing chalitza. She's saying to her present husband,
I'm sorry. You're also a marriage therapist. It's going to be better. It's going to be good. It's going to get stronger. I'll see you in my office on Tuesday. All right. So I think what the Gemara understands is the notion of a man feeling that his wife has a connection to another man that required a breaking of a bond. Right? See, you were somehow, all these years I was married to you, somehow you were bound to this other man. So the Gemara feels that will erode the fabric of the marriage. It feels, actually, the lashon of it is mimasya gavrayu. It's not nice. It doesn't feel right in a marriage. I'm sorry. Oh, that's an interesting point also. Right? That could be another. So it could be, the answer to that would be, we wouldn't do it in a case of kahuna. But in a case of non-kahuna, we would do it. That could be what the Gemara's understanding.
I want to ask about the kahuna too, because if you decide that your kid is a mountain, now you've been feeding the kid truth.
No, remember again.
But before you had
Look, that you can't do anything about. That's already in the past. What the Gemara is asking over here is in a situation ultimately where you could do a chalitza. Again, it's not this suggestion doesn't work in all cases. There's no question. But in a case where you could do a chalitza, why not do it right now? To which the Gemara says, "V'chi teima limasan." So maybe we'll say, "Who cares? You know what? If halachically that's what's appropriate, that the woman does chalitza, so who cares? Maybe we shouldn't worry about the fact that her husband's going to be a little bit put off by this." But it's so good. The Gemara answers, "Tirachah darchei Noam v'chol nesivo se'ashalom." It's such a beautiful answer. The Gemara says, "The ways of the Torah are pleasant, and all of its pathways are peace." Meaning, Rabbosa, at the end of the day, we do not want the halacha is not going to mandate something that ultimately, again, is going to potentially erode the fabric of a marriage. And therefore, again, as good of a suggestion as it is, the potential collateral damage that comes about as a result is too much, and therefore we take it off the table. Tashma, Darma Vitarfon. We'll say this is also another interesting Gemara. Rabbi Tarfon said, Ta'avani, right? I desire Masai Tavot Saras Habas Liyadi Ve'asa'ena. Rabbi Tarfon said, I can't wait for the day that the co-wife of my daughter is going to come to my hand and I'm going to marry her. And I was like, obviously, this is a very strange statement on a number of levels, because obviously the only way that the daughter of his wife, the co-wife of his daughter is going to come to his hands for marriage is how? Is if his brother dies. So we'll say, obviously Rabbi Tarfon is not waiting for the day that his brother dies. What's happening over here is Rabbi Tarfon is making a halachic statement. That meaning, I don't want my brother to die, but should the situation ever occur, I can't wait for the day in which I would technically do Yibum with my sister-in-law. What was he making a statement about, Rabbi Osai? What he was saying was, at the end of the day, I will make a demonstrative display that Yibum is permitted with such a woman. Right? He's not literally saying, I desire my sister-in-law. He's not saying, I want my brother to die. He's making a halachic statement that I hold like Beis Shammai. Namely, that halacha lemaisa, Yibum is permitted with a tzara of an erva. To which the Gemara says, Ema va'asiena. Maybe he didn't say va'asiena, which means I will marry, but what? Va'asiena, I will marry her off. Right? To which Rabbi say, ultimately, again, asiena would mean marrying her off would be reflective of the pina beis hillel. Vaha ta'avani kamar. But one second, but he said, I desire. La fuke midir Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. The truth is, he's coming to argue on the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, let's reach a compromise position. Let's reach a compromise position where Lemaisa, again, will just do chalitza no matter what. To which Rabbi Tarfon says there's no compromise position. The halacha follows Beis Hillel. Halacha follows Beis Hillel. And that's why, again, should this case ever happen, I would never make that co-wife do chalitza, but rather ultimately, again, I would simply marry her off to someone else. So he's making a dramatic statement against Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. There is no need for a compromise because Beis Shammai is wrong, Beis Hillel is correct. Tashma. Mas Rabosai, we're still trying to remember, just don't lose sight of what the Gemara is trying to accomplish. We're still just trying to figure out, when Beis Shammai argues on Beis Hillel, do they actually implement those rulings, or are they just simply arguing in an intellectual, theoretical way, but lemaisa they always yield to Beis Hillel? Tashma, ma'as sebebitho shabim gamliyam, shahaysa nesua la'aba ochit. Rabosai, listen to this. So the daughter of Rabbi Gamliel was married to Rabbi Gamliel's brother Abba. And what happened? Umis below banim. And Rabbi Gamliel's brother Abba died without children. The Yibim Rabbi Gamliel as Sarasa. And Rabbi Gamliel obviously didn't do Yibim with his daughter, but he did do Yibim with what? With who? With his daughter's co-wife. With his daughter's co-wife. And Rabbi Gamliel again say, did Yibim with a Tsaras Erva. Bitizbira. Rabbi Gamliel mitamidei Beis Shammai. Now I'll ask you, was Rabbi Gamliel a student of Beis Shammai? Now I will say, Rabbi Gamliel was a direct descendant of Hillel, a ben achar ben, a son after son from Hillel. So can it be that Rabbi Gamliel was a Talmud of Beis Shammai? So what's going on? Meaning, remember, according to Beis Hillel, there's no Yibum in a situation like this. Right, that in fact, according to Beis Hillel, it would have been asa for Rabbi Gamliel to do what he did. So I guess what the Gemara is saying is the easiest way to answer this up is, Rabbi Gamliel paskin like Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai holds there is Yibam with a Tsaras Erva. But the Gemara says that can't be true. Can't be that Rabbi Gamliel, the anacle of Hillel, would paskin like Shammai. To which the Gemara says something very interesting. Ela shiny beetle Rabbi Gamliel, da'ailin is havi. Oh, to which the Gemara answers, unfortunately, the daughter of Rabbi Gamliel was an islandess. So we'll say, so how does that help us? Rashi says, islandess haisa, utnan oshenimtsu islandess sarasim with us. We'll say, remember again, we said the Mishnah, that Lamai said there's one exception to this saras erva rule. Well, there's more than one, but one of the exceptions to the saras erva rule is what? Is if the erva is an islandess. If she is an islandess, then by definition, the marriage tree was a mekachtos. If the marriage tree was a mekachtos, then what? Then Lamai said, it's as if retroactively the deceased brother was not married to her, in which case, again, there is no what? There is no tsaras erva. Why? Because there was no marriage to an erva. All that's left actually is the other wife. And that's what Rabbi Gamliel was able to do yibum with her. And that would be true even according to Beis Hillel. The Gemara says, 1 second. Hamidik Tani Seifa. I'm just not going through the whole islandess thing because we spent a lot of time on that already. Hamidik Tani Seifa. But we'll look at the end of the Mishnah. Achirim Omrim. Or the end of that, right? Achirim Omrim. Bitos Rabbi Gamliel islandess haisa. But you know what? Here's the only problem. At the end of that brisa, the brisa says that the achirim, the others say that no, the reason Rabbi Gamliel was able to do this, why? Was because his daughter was an islandess. Now the fact that that is the statement of the achirim at the end of the Mishnah indicates to us what? Michlal, the Tanakama Savar, love islandess haisa. So you're supposed to say, you know, whenever, just in the textual flow, so you have the case, Rabbi Gamliel does yibum with the tzara of his daughter, okay? And then the achirim come along and say, oh, but his daughter was an islandess, which indicates to us what? That the Tanakama, the unnamed opinion in the first part of the Braisa, what? Does not hold that she was an islandess. So let me see, this is different. So which the Gemara says, no, I'll tell you what happened. Michlal Tanakama Savar Lav Islandess Haisa. To which the Gemara says, here's the point of Machlokes. Hikir ba, velo hikir ba ika ben ahim. The truth is, the Machlokes in the Tanakama and the Achirim is in the case of hikir ba v'shlo hikir ba. Also, we had this a couple of days ago. Namely, whether the husband recognized that she was an islandess or didn't recognize that she was an islandess before they got married. Look at Rashi. Hachi gar sinan hikir ba velo hikir ba ika ben ahim. So it could be that the point of contention between the Tanakama and the Achirim is whether or not the husband recognized that she was an islandess before they got married. According to the Tanakama, the only way that it's a mekachtos is if what? Is if Lamaisa, he did not know before they got married that she was an islandess. But according to the Tanakama, if he knew before the marriage that she was an islandess and he married her anyway, you can't claim mekachtos. According to the Achirim, even if he knew that she was an islandess before then he married her, you could still claim mekachtos. The other possibility is Kines ulabasov girish ika benayum. Other possibilities, machlokus between the Tanakam and the Achirim, is in a case of where he first married the other wife and only afterwards divorced the islandess wife. So we'll say, remember again, we saw this case also, that when we say that the erva exempts the co-wife from going ahead and doing yibum, is that only in a situation where they were both married to the deceased brother at the time that he died? Or is it true even if they were both married to him at the time that he was alive? And the fact that they were married simultaneously prevents the tzara from ultimately doing yibum. So we're just trying to figure out what the point of a contention between the Tanakam and the Achirim is. Other possibility is Yesh Tanai Babia. This is actually a very interesting idea. Yesh Tanai Babia means, does a man make his bia contingent on certain factors? Meaning, I will say, when a man marries a woman, there's a whole bunch of expectations he has going into that marriage. One of those expectations is that the woman is going to be able to bear him children. Now, let's say, again, Lamaisa, she can't bear children. So then it turns out, I will say, that's what? That, again, if you retroactively annul all of the, or if you retroactively annul the marriage, then it turns out that all of the times that he was intimate with his wife were what? We're bias znus. We're active immorality. Because in active relations with a woman who's not your wife are ultimately, again, acts of immorality. It's znus. So what I say, it's a very interesting machlok, because we actually see this in Ksuvas. That one opinion says, okay, well, Lamaisa, if the marriage is retroactively annulled, then that's the fallout of it. That's the collateral damage, that all of those acts of bia were bias znus. The other opinion says no. That even though a man walks into a marriage with the expectation that his wife is going to go ahead and have children, at the first time that he's intimate with her, he gives up, he's mevater. He yields on all of those expectations for one simple reason, which is what? He doesn't want his bia to be a bias znus. So the Gemara says over here that perhaps that's the point of contention between the Tanakama and the Achirim. Okay, so we'll say the point over here is, again, the Gemara just went, this is really a tangent. The Gemara just pointing out over here that the Maisa is a fundamental machlok, is both agree, both the Achirim and Tanakama agree that the daughter of Rabbi Gamliel was an islandess. But there's a machlok in Tanakama, Alt, and the agree, obviously, the Metzias, that Rabbi Gamliel did Yibum with the Tzara, with the co-wife of his daughter. They just disagree as to the particular circumstance, halachic circumstances of the case. Fine. Weiter. The Gemara says the following.
Is that assuming that everyone holds that islandess is not a
mechatos? It depends. No. Islandess can be a mechatos, but... That is correct. Then, if you hold that hikirba and hikirba before they got married is not a mekachtos, so therefore you can't claim mekachtos. So the shaila is again, what would we do with retroactive nullification of the marriage? Would is a man willing? No. This is still assuming that you can go ahead and claim mekachtos by an islandess, but it could be that even though a man could claim mekachtos, he's not going to claim mekachtos once there's bia, because a man is not going to want to make his bia a biasnus. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Masiv Rav Meshasha. So Meshasha raises the Kasha. We'll say it was still same question, still trying to figure out, does Beis Shammai actually implement their rulings or not? The Gemara raises another Kasha. So Masiv Rav Meshasha, Masiv Rabbi Akiva, Shalikeit Esrog Be'echa B'Shvat. So we'll listen to this. Rabbi Akiva once picked an Esrog on the first of Shvat, and Nahag Bo Beis Ishurin, or Isurin, I should say, so watch this. Look at Rashi just a moment. So we'll say Rabbi Kiva picked an Esrog on the first of Shvat. And when was this? It was the second year of the Shemitah cycle going into the third year. And what happened? And he tithed the Esrog two tithes. So we'll say, remember, according to Beis Shammai, the first of Shvat was still year number two. Because according to Beis Hillel, when is the new year for trees? Tu B'Shvat, the 15th. Therefore, again, according to Beis Hillel, when Rabbi Akiva picked that fruit on the first of Shvat, that's a year two fruit. And therefore, Lamaisa, in year two, you have to go ahead and bring Maaser Sheni. And according to Beis Hillel already, according to Beis Shammai, the first of Shvat is already what? The first of Shvat is already year number three. And therefore, Lamaisa, again, you'll have to give Maaser Ani. So Rabbi Akiva, when he went ahead and he picked the Esrog on the first of Shvat, gave Maaser Sheni from it like Beis Hillel, that it's year two, but also took into account the opinion of Beis Shammai, who holds that first of Shvat is the new year, therefore it's year three, and therefore also took Maaser Ani from it. Now, what do you see from that, Rabbi Osai? What do you see from that? You see from that, Shmamina Asu. You see from that that Beis Shammai, in fact, did implement their rulings, because if Beis Shammai didn't implement their rulings, then halacha follows Beis Hillel. First of Shvat is still year number two, and all you need to do is separate Maaser Sheni and nothing else. To which the Gemara says, no, it's not a good raya. Why? Rabbi Akiva gamrei istapik lei v'lo yada ibe silba echad b'shvat amar o b'tu b'shvat amar. Both listen to this. Rabbi Akiva passed in like Beis Hillel. What was the problem over here? He didn't remember what Beis Hillel said. He didn't remember, did Beis Hillel say the first of Shvat, or did Beis Hillel say the 15th of Shvat? Therefore, he's covering his bases, but he's not covering his bases for Beis Shammai. He's covering his bases in accordance with Beis Hillel. Masiv Mar Zutra. Ma'asev yaldu kalasa shel Shammai Azak. You're supposed to listen to this. So Mar Zutra is another kash, another case. One time, the daughter-in-law of Shammai gave birth right before Sukkis, and what did he do? Upiches es hamaziva v'sichich agabe mita b'shvil katan. We'll say, so what did Beis Shammai do? This is amazing. So Beis Shammai opened up the roof on top of the baby's cradle, and he put tzchach on top of the baby's cradle. We'll say, remember, machol gesen shabbos hilul sukkah. Beis Hillel holds that only a katan who doesn't need his mother is obligated in sukkah. But remember, again, Beis Shammai holds that even a katan who does need his mother is chayiv in sukkah. So Beis Shammai literally opens up the roof on top of the baby's cradle and puts schach on there. Shema mina asu. What do you see from here? You see from here that Beis Shammai didn't just pass him, but Beis Shammai ruled in accordance with the Piskei Halacha. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam haroa omer lafushe avir ka'avid. Tzibo says the difference over there. Because apparently in times of the Gemara, it wasn't uncommon to go ahead and take off part of the roof and put some schach. Why would you do that? Ventilation. So someone seeing that would just assume that perhaps, again, it's hot. They want a little bit more ventilation. So we'll say, now what the Gemara is essentially answering is the following. What the Gemara is suggesting is, Beis Shammai didn't implement their Piskei Halacha. You know why? Because back, what did we see yesterday? Why wouldn't Beis Shammai have implemented their Piskei Halacha? Lo tisko didu. Right? Lo tasu agudos agudos. Because Beis Shammai did not want there to be different groups in halacha. But however, it's not lo tisko didu and what? When one could attribute your actions to some other motivation. So if somebody could look at taking off the roof and replacing it with schach as providing more ventilation, that wouldn't be a violation of lo tisko didu. Okay, massive marzutra. So marzutra brings another case. Ma'aseh b'shokes yehu. We'll say another interesting case. Shokes yehu was a water trough. A water trough, Shahaisi Yerushalayim. They called it the water basin of Yehu that was in Yerushalayim. V'haisin kuvla mikva. And I'm both saying now this Yehu basin didn't have 40 sud, didn't have enough water to constitute a kasher mikva. But here's what's interesting was there was a hole in the wall connecting it ultimately to a kasher mikvah. And I was saying we saw this earlier. That's the concept of hashaka. So hashaka means when you have waters that literally kiss each other. If the waters of a mikvah that doesn't have the shear for a mikvah touch the waters of another area another mikvah that does have a proper shear, that even renders the deficient waters fit for use. So what happens? So therefore, people would immerse either themselves or their utensils in this Yehu basin. And what happened? And therefore, I will say, people used to go ahead, they were metayer, they used this Yehu basin all the time for purification purposes. And Beis Shammai went ahead, and what did they do? They widened the hole between the Kasher Mikvah and the Yehu basin. Why should Beis Shammai omrim ad shetivchas beruba? Because Beis Shammai holds that you have to have a much larger opening. The majority of the wall between the water basin and the mikvah has to be majority open. Utnan, and we learned erev mikvahs. Rabbosai, if you want literally to combine two mikvahs, when we had this case earlier, I have two mikvahs. One is a kasher mikvah, one is not a kasher mikvah. But I want to link the waters of the two to make them both kasher mikvahs. What do I need to do? Kishfalferes hanud ba'ovya, ubechalala kishtei etzbos chozros limkoma. So we'll say, what do I need? I just need an opening the size of the tube of a wineskin, which is large enough to be able to insert two fingers and to rotate those two fingers. So we'll say, that's a psak of Beis Hillel. What do you see from here? Beis Shammai disagreed, and what? And they acted on it. So here you see that Beis Shammai didn't just paskin, but they actually ruled like their Piskei Halacha. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam haro amaveis. Hasam haro omer lafushe mayuhu dekavit. Again, I will say, when you saw that, so the truth is, again, you wouldn't automatically assume that lamaisa Beis Shammai was doing that in order to implement their Pesach Halacha. But rather, you could just say they were doing it. Why? To allow for a greater flow, freer flow of water, which ultimately, again, would be beneficial for the Yehu basin. Not to necessarily make the basin more kosher, but just to go ahead and allow for actually more water in the basin. And therefore, again, Rashi points out over here that would not look like agudos agudos. That would not look like two different camps in Halacha. Tashma, Dam Rav Elazar bar Tzadok. Let's listen to this. Kishayisi lomei Torah et Rabbi Yochanan Acharani. When I was learning by Rabbi Yochanan Acharani, Ra'isa, Rabbi Yochanan is amazing. Ra'isi shaya ocha pas chareva b'melach b'sheni b'tzoras. So this is Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok. When I learned by Rabbi Yochanan Acharani, I saw that all he had to eat was dry bread and salt. These were years of famine, and so therefore all he had was dry bread and salt. Basi vahodasi es ava. So Rabbi Yochanan Acharani said, I went and told my father that Rabbi Yochanan Acharani is literally living on nothing. Mom, she didn't have like the spread, you know. So we take it for granted, you know. Baruch Hashem, we come off the heels of a 3-day Yom Tov, Baruch Hashem, and there's more and there's plentiful and it's beautiful. You know, it's amazing to see how throughout the ages there was so much deprivation and so much. It's amazing. So what happened? So here Rabbi Elazar bar Tzaddok comes along and says, "Father, I Rabbi Yochanan ben Charani," and literally he had nothing to eat. So Amarli, my father said to me, "Holich lo zesim, bring him olives." I asked him, "I'll bring him some olives." Balachtilon, I brought them to him. Ra'us an shilachim. So Rabbi Yochanan Charani saw that the olives were wet. Amarli ein ani ochal zesim. I can't eat these olives. And I will say what Rabbi Yochanan Charani was concerned about was what? Was tuma. So remember again. So a food item can only become hochshel tuma when it comes in contact with liquid. His concern was that because the olives were wet, so just because they were wet doesn't mean they were tame, but it means they were receptive to tuma. Which means again the mice. So again at the end of the day, if they were in a klicheres or something else, they could have become tame over here. Amarli, in the chozesim, basi v'hodasi es abba. So I came and I told my father. And what happened? Amarli, so my father said to me, lech ve'emor lo, go and tell him, chavis nekuva haisa. The truth is, again, the olives were in a perforated barrel. And I will say, now what's the chap of the perforated barrel? The idea of the perforated barrel is, remember, liquid only is machshir, only makes something receptive to tuma if the liquid is significant. If the liquid is not significant, then lemaisa, again, it does not make an item receptive to tuma. And I will say, remember, the reason why those olives became wet is because olives emit a moisture, what the Rashi calls a mohal, like a moisture. That moisture is not olive oil. That moisture is some other liquid. The fact that the barrel was perforated, which means what? We don't care about that liquid, means that that liquid is not significant enough to go ahead and make the olives wet. If the barrel was perforated, then how is it that the olives became wet? Ella shesasmu shmar. But what happened in the Bosai? The dregs. Some of the dregs of the olives, right, plugged up the hole. So because they plugged up the perforations, what happened? So the liquid remained in the barrel, and that's why the olives were wet. But the olives are not hokshel tuma. Tanan, and we learned, chavish al zeisim migulgalim. It will say, if you have a barrel of softened olives, migulgal means softened olives, Beisham, I say, ein tzricha l'nekev. Beis Shammai says, you do not need to perforate it. Why, Rabbi Osei? Because according to Beis Shammai, the liquid that oozes from the olives is just like a fruit juice. And fruit juice doesn't make something hochshel l'tuma. It's insignificant. O Beisilo omrim tzrichim l'nekev. Now, Rabbi Osei, Beisilo paskin, that you require the perforation. Why? Because Rabbi Osei, according to Beisilo, anything that oozes from the olive has the status of what? Has the status of olive oil. And olive oil is one of the 7 liquids that makes something hochshel tuma. Umodim shem nikva v'sasmua shmarim shitora. But everyone agrees that what? That if the barrel was perforated, but then it became plugged up with some of the dregs, that lemais, again, the olives are tahor, why rabosai? Because it wasn't your intention to try to hold onto that liquid. The afapi shet talmid shamai haya. Now, even though, again, he was a talmid of shamai, nevertheless, kol ma'asav lo ase elek divrei Beis Hillel. Everything he did in accordance with Beis Hillel. Now, says the Gemara, I amrit bishlama asu. Now, if you hold that Beis Shammai literally implemented their rulings, Haini Rabuse, then Rabbi Osei, this is the novelty in this case, because remember again, according to Beis Shammai, you didn't need to go ahead and what? You didn't need to go ahead and, Rabbi Osei, follow this story. So remember, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddok's father, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddok brought the olives to Rabbi Yochanan Acharoni. Rabbi Yochanan Acharoni wouldn't eat it because they were wet, he thought they were Makabal Tuma. So Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddok then tells him, no, it's okay, why? They were in a perforated barrel that got plugged up. Now Rabbi Osei, now watch this. Rabbi Yochanan Acharoni himself, as well as his father, were Talmidim of Beis Shammai. According to Beis Shammai, what? You don't need to perforate the barrel. Why? Because according to Beis Shammai, the liquid that comes out is not olive oil. It's some other kind of moisture. It doesn't make the olive receptive to tuma. Now, but yet what? The barrel was still perforated. Why? It seems to be why, in accordance with Beis Hillel. Now, Rabbi Osei, if you say that Beis Shammai implemented their rulings, then that's the novelty in this case, because even though here, Rabbi Yochanan Acharoni and his father were Talmidim of Beis Shammai and did everything like Beis Shammai, they still perforated perforated the pot in accordance with, or the barrel in accordance with Beis Hillel. Now that's only a novelty if what? If Beis Shammai implemented their rulings. But if Beis Shammai never implemented their rulings and just everybody agreed with Beis Hillel, then what's the big novelty that they perforated the barrel? Ela I amrit lo asumai rabusei. Tashma, so what's the Gemara brings another kasha. Tashma, shalos Rabbi Yoshua. Tsaras habasma. So we'll say now they get back to. So we'll say the point over here is we still don't really have a fully conclusive proof one way or the other. We know that Beis Shammai argued on Beis Hillel. The shaila is, did Beis Shammai implement their rulings or not? So the Gemara says the following. Tashma. Well, we're not. Gemara leaves this one. Gemara leaves this. My Rabbi will say, what's the Chiddush? Now, again, now we'll say, now it would appear, based on this, it would appear that Lamaisa, according to this, that Beis Shammai did implement their rulings. But Gemara is almost like a question. It would only appear that Rabbi Yochanan HaChorani and his father went above and beyond if you hold that Beis Shammai implemented their rulings. But if they didn't implement their rulings, then my Rabbi will say, what's the big deal in what they did? But again, it's still not conclusive. So the Mara circles back. Tashma, Sholos Rabbi Yoshua. The answer of Yoshua, Tsaras Habas Mahu. What is the halacha when it comes to the co-wife of an era? So also remember, we keep coming back to the same case, because remember, this is the flashpoint. This is the case in which Beis Shammai is arguing on in our particular sugya. So what is the status of the co-wife of an erva? Does she need chalitza / yibum like Beis Shammai, or is she totally exempt like Beis Hillel? So Amar Lehem, Rabbi, listen to this. Rabbi Shor responds, Amar Lehem, Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. So Rabbi Shor says, Machlokes. Machlokes. So they say to him, very nice. V'halacha k'divrei, Rabbi Yoshua, we know it's a Machlokes. Thank you very much. Right? Who do we paskin like? Amar, listen to what he says. Amar Lehem, Mipnei ma'atem machnisin roshi, Bein shnei harim gidolim ubein shtei machlokes gidolos bein Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Why are you asking me to insert myself in the middle of a huge machlokes in Beis Shammai Beis Hillel? Why? Literally, why are you asking me to put my head between two large mountains, between two machlokes in Beis Shammai Beis Hillel? Listen to this, Rabbosan, it's very interesting. Mesiare ani shema yarutsu galgolosi. I'm afraid someone's going to smash my skull. Now, we'll say, now, what is he afraid someone's going to smash his skull? So, we'll say, what we're going to see. Remember, we'll say, how you paskin on this shayla is going to put someone in hot water. Why? Because families have conducted themselves like Beis Shammai or like Beis Hillel, which means that, Rabbi Osai, no matter how you come out on this question, you are going to be damaging someone's yichus. So Yeshua says, why are you putting me in the middle of this, essentially asking me to get into hot water with someone? To which the Gemara says, but however, so I'm not going to tell you the halacha follows, but I will tell you, aval ani meir lachem, Ashtei mishpachos gidolos shay b'shalayim. I'll tell you about two great families in Jerusalem. Mishpachas Beis Tzivuim mi ben Achmai, the family of Beis Tzivuim, the sons of Achmai, or mishpachas Beis Kofai mi ben Mekoshesh sheheim b'nei Tzaros. Rose, I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you about two of the most prominent families in Jerusalem. In Yerushalayim, that's what? That Lamaisa, again, they are descendants of Tsaros, of co-wives who married out into the general population. Meaning they are the descendants of co-wives of Erebas who never did Yibum, never did Chalitza, married to the general population. And what? Umehem Kohanim Gidolim v'shimshu al gabi ha-mizbeach. And what? And their descendants were high priests, Kohanim Gidolim, who mamish served in the Beis HaMikdash. So what Rabbi Yoshua is saying is like this. I'm not going to tell you that halacha follows like, but I am going to tell you that it would appear that I'm going to tell you that there are Kohanim Gidolim who came from families who paskined like Beis Hillel, who were the descendants of women who were co-wives of Ervas, never did Yibum, never did Chalitza, married into the general population, and their sons are Kohanim Gidolim. So Rabbi Yoshua essentially is saying, without explicitly saying it, is what? Is the halacha follows Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, I amrit bishlama asu. So we'll say now, again, we're going back. See, if you say that Beis Shammai actually not just paskin, but implemented their rulings, hainu dika amar misyare ani. I understand why Rabbi Yoshua be afraid. Because Rabbi Yoshua say, again, then if Rabbi Yoshua says, halacha follows Beis Hillel, what Rabbi Yoshua essentially is saying is what, Rabbi Yoshua say? That lemaisa, that Lamaisa, people who did Yibum with these women would essentially be Yichos, would have damaged Yichos. But if Beis Shammai never actually implemented the halacha, then what? Then why does Rabbi Yeshua have to be afraid? So there seems to be a proof that what? Seems to be a proof that Lamaisa, Beis Shammai not just paskin, but also implemented their piskei halacha. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, am I ka'amar misyari ani? So the Gemara says, unihi nami, the asu, my misyari ani. And even if Beis Shammai did implement their rulings, what is Rabbi Yeshua worried about? Ha'am Rabbi Yeshua, Ein mamzer ele mechayve misos basin. Rabbi said, listen to this. So now what we're saying is, it must have been that Beis Shammai implemented their rulings, because why else would Rabbi Yoshua be afraid to take a stand? But why should Rabbi Yoshua be afraid to take a stand? Remember again, nothing bad is going to happen, because even if he says Allah follows Beis Hillel, and therefore again, Beis Shammai is wrong, the families that followed Beis Shammai's advice, they're not mamzerim, because Rabbi Yeshua holds that she can't produce a mamzer except from what? Except from a relationship that is prohibited on the penalty of Misas Beis Din. To which the Gemara says, Nehi, nami de mamzer lohavi. It's true. Even though the products of a union based on Beis Shammai's sakalocha would not produce mamzerim, then what? Lohavi pogum. Would they not bless you? Would they not be pogum? Or else what we said earlier. Meaning, again, remember, according to from Beis Hillel's perspective, if you followed Beis Shammai's advice, and therefore what? You did Yibum with one of these co-wives, then what? The child from that union would be pogum. Meaning, if let's say the child ultimately would be pogum, right? Wouldn't be able to marry into the kuna if it was a girl. So that's the Gemara says. Pogum yohavi mi kavachomer mi almana. There'd be a kavachomer from almana. What's the kavachomer? Ma almana she'in isura noheg bichol. So we'll say this is if a kohen marries an almana. So if a kohen marries an almana, I should say a kohen gadol marries an almana, right? Let's say the high priest, kohen gadol is not permitted to marry. Regular kohen is permitted to marry an almana. Kohen gadol marries an almana. Then what happens? Now in isura noheg bichol, which means what? Rabbi say. No, a not regular person, even regular kohen, is permitted to marry an almana. It's only a kohen gadol can't marry an almana. Bless you. Nevertheless, bina pogum, if she has a child with the kohen gadol, that child is pogum. Look at what I mean. Now, in that context, what it means is the child is a cholol, which means the child is not a practicing kohen. Zushi sura shava bakol. Then this woman, ultimately, again, whose iser is the same with everyone, meaning again, she's an eshes ach. It applies to everybody. So the Gemara says, certainly again, her offspring should be pogum as well. And we'll say that what's very interesting over here is, going back for just a moment, the question they asked Rabbi Yoshua was about the co-wives themselves, and Rabbi Yoshua yet answers them about what? The offspring of the co-wives. To which the Gemara answers, Tarti kaboi mine. In reality, they were asking Rabbi Yoshua two questions. Tsaros mai, they asked him, number one, what's the status of these women? Are the tsaros permitted to go ahead and marry? What's their status? And furthermore, bimtim tzlamar tsaros ke Beis Hillel, and if you hold that the tsaros are treated like Beis Hillel, meaning that there is no yibum, no chalitza with the tsar of an erva, but she just marries into the general population, b'nei tsaros de Beis Hillel Beis Shammai mahu, then what is the status of those women, those tsaros of Beis Hillel, who marry into the general population, what is their status according to Beis Shammai? Because according to Beis Shammai, they should have done Yibum or Chalitza. They married into the general population without Yibum or Chalitza. What is their status according to Beis Shammai? To which the Gemara says, Lamai naf kamino, who cares? Hey, meaning, if the halacha follows Beis Hillel, who cares what Beis Shammai thinks about the offspring of those who pass in like Beis Hillel? I'll tell you why it matters. Well, it's actually very interesting. Le mifshat vlad machzir grushaso le Beis Hillel. Well, I'll tell you why. You know what it has to do with? There's the case of machzir grushaso. Remember the case of machzir grushaso? That's the case of Reuven divorce. No Yibum over here. Reuven divorces his wife, right? What happens? She goes in and marries Shimon. Shimon's not Reuven's brother. He's just a guy. She marries Shimon. Shimon divorces her. Reuven remarries her. That is illegal. You can remarry your ex-wife as long as you didn't marry someone else. Here she married someone else. Now what happens after he remarries her? Then what? They have a child together. What is the status of that child? So both sides, essentially, the status of that child would be the same as what? Would be the status of a child, according to Beis Shammai, of a woman, of a tzara, who didn't do chalitza and married another man, right? So again, Rabbi say, so the, according to Beis Shammai, the child of a tzara of an erva who didn't do chalitza with her brother-in-law but just married a man from the general population would be in the same boat as the child of a machzir grushaso. See, even though I don't care about what Beis Shammai thinks legabe yibum, because in the yibum case we paskin like Beis Hillel, that saras erva does not need yibum rachalitza, she could just marry to the general population. But I would be curious to know what Beis Shammai thinks about that child, right? The offspring of the saras erva who didn't do chalitza, married a man from the general population. What does Beis Shammai think about that kid? Because whatever Beis Shammai think about that kid, that would probably be the same status that would be accorded to who? That would be accorded to the child of the Machzir Grushaso case. To which the Gemara says, do we say on one hand you can make a kavachom? What's the kavachomer? Uma amana la kohen gadol sheni sur shav bekalbina pagum. So we'll say if an amana who marries a kohen gadol, the iser is not the same by everyone. Meaning again, that's only a specific iser by kohen gadol. And yet what? Her son is pagum. Zoshi sur shav bekalbina. So everybody has a prohibition of machzir grusha. So eino din b'shabina pagum. Certainly again, the child is pagum. O Dilma Ikal Mifrach, or perhaps I can go ahead and say what? Mala Amana Shehi Atzma Mischalalas. Right, we'll say that what? That Lamaisa, the Amana case is different, right, Abosai? Because in the case of Amana, she actually becomes a Chalala as well. In the case of Amana, Abosai, she also, by marrying the Kohen Gadol, she also becomes prohibited to the Kohen, meaning her personal status changes. So because her, meaning, what that means is if the Kohen Gadol were to then die, so she's an Amana now, she can't marry a regular Kohen anymore. Why? Because as a result of her illegal marriage to the Kohen Gadol, her status has also changed the Gabi de Kuna. But Amalahu, actually, we'll stop over here. So therefore, again, we'll stop right. But right at this Amalahu. So we'll say we're going to continue with this dialogue tomorrow. But Lamaisa, what seems to be coming out over here is the following. What seems to be coming out over here is that Lamaisa was still trying to figure out, did Beis Shammai just simply have this piske halacha, or I apologize, I lift you off in the middle like of a sentence, but we'll pick, it's really a new part. Did Beis Shammai, when they paskin halacha, just paskin, or did they actually implement? It would appear, based on the conversation with Rabbi Yoshua, that they actually implemented. Because otherwise, because Rabbi Yoshua says, why are you asking me to put myself in the middle of a difficult situation that's essentially going to make someone angry at me? But I will tell you that what? That some of the most prominent families in Yerushalayim, a paskin like who? Paskin like Beis Hillel, which just seemed to be based on our circumstantial evidence, l'mais again, halacha follows Beis Hillel. But I'm still reticent to say that straight out, because again, I will anger those who conduct themselves like Shammai. All right, so Amir Tashem, we'll pick up over here, Amir Tashem, tomorrow.